Hard work beats talent when talent doesn't work hard. That's why when it comes to hard work, nothing works harder than a Chevy Silverado, the official truck partner of the Chicago Bears. Check out a new Silverado at ChevyDriveChicago.com.
Happy holidays, everybody. Happy New Year's Eve day. My name is Elizabeth Alfano, and I'm here with you until noon, filling in for the ever-fabulous Bill and Wendy. And they'll be back with you on Monday, which would be 2016. So it's the very last day of 2015, which is always a nice day. I just love this day, actually. It's a very peaceful day, I find, sort of the calm before the storm. So I'm sure everyone has big plans tonight. But before we talk about tonight's plans, we've got lots of plans for the next 2 hours. I am now with... I'm going to say my good friend. Can I say that? Yes, I'm going to say my good friend, sommelier John McDaniel. He is here pouring champagne. That's why he's not at his microphone. He is pouring three kinds of champagne for me. And I'm going to say my new friend, not my old friend, but my new friend, Mike McNamara, who's also joining us here. Great to have you.
You too? Yeah. New year, new friends.
That's right. That's right. You're a new friend for the new year.
Exactly.
And old you're friends, also going to be drinking champagne with me today.
Which is trouble for everybody here, but that's all right. We're ready.
No, this is good. This is a good way to start.
I love my bubbly.
Well, you're getting three. You're getting three kinds of bubbly. Because John McDaniel, who's now just put on his headphones, He has poured us three kinds of champagne. Before you tell us just about what we're going to sip, I want to say a little bit about you guys so people know. So I'm going to call you Mac.
Okay,
When I write emails to you, I don't call you Mike McNamara.
Lots
I just call
you
Mac.
That's good.
That's how it's going down here today.
Okay, good.
So Mac, you, of course, are an actor, and you've been in Northlight, and you've performed at Timeline Theater, and you've done the Guinness Believer Tour, and you've been on Chicago PD. But I think people know you most well, perhaps, as the director of the Midwest Film Festival.
All year round, every first Tuesday, we show all films that are made here in Chicago in the Midwest.
Except January 5th.
Except January 5th. Can we take a break? Because we're busy drinking champagne from John McDaniel.
I mean, you have to do it just a little bit. Just a touch.
And John McDaniel, who, as I say, sort of old friend to me now, because you were on my television show, The Dinner Party.
I was, which is the wonderful Joe Mantegna.
With Joe Mantegna. Yeah, we had such a great time. And Bela Gandhi, such a good time. And that TV show, I'll say, airs Channel 19 every Friday, 10:30 p.m. But so you're my old friend, because you've been with me now for a while. But I'll just give people the lowdown on just how great you are. You were named Top 20 Young Sommeliers in America in 2012. And then you were named Top 30 Sommeliers in America, all 50 states, in 2013 and 14 by the Guild of Sommeliers. If this were not enough, you're also the owner and creator of your own wine cellar.
Own winery, basically.
Yeah, Amos Cellars. Mm-hmm. But hold on, there's more. You're also the general manager for the Gage, the Dawson, and Aconto. So you're a busy kid.
And starting January 20th, adjunct professor of hospitality at Roosevelt University.
It's just not possible. You're too young.
I found that I had an hour and 15 minutes free two times a week. But what's really odd is that, so it's a beverage management class, and they're going to hate me because it's drinking at 12:30 on a Monday and Wednesday afternoon.
But we've got that beat because we're drinking today at 10 in the morning.
Perfect.
So
I've trumped my class already. It's amazing.
Class is in session.
Yes.
Let's go, McDaniel.
So, John, tell us, what are we drinking now? So you've got us all lined up here. I hope people walk by Michigan Avenue and see us. You've got us lined up with three champagne glasses. What is the first champagne that you have poured for us?
So for those of you at home, you won't see that these are all wrapped in aluminum foil. The point of this teasing exercise is that we're going to taste three bubblies that are pink. It is New Year's Eve. It is the day of celebration, and the most consumed bubbles are happening today all around the world. So figuring you might bring three different ones, and they're all very different. So we're going to taste, and hopefully we'll remember by the end of it what the first one was.
Yes, we'll compare at the end which one we like the most. Just give me the name and price of this first one.
Oh, well, that's the teaser, because that's going to be at the end.
Oh, you're saving it. Oh, I see. All right. Ooh, he's sly.
There's the kicker. There's the kicker. But they're all pink, I promise you that.
Okay.
And they all are vast majority Pinot Noir.
I love that. You know, I never think of this is ridiculous, but I never think of a champagne grape as an actual
wine grape. I think of it as its own entity. Mm. That probably makes no sense.
Agreed. But. No, agreed. I think of Pinot Noir as like a red.
Yeah.
As opposed to a bubbly.
Yes. Pink bubbly.
So the best champagnes are really just Chardonnay and Pinot Noir with a little bit of fizzle is the way to look at it. So 20 years from now, it should still be a good wine anyway. So
I love how the sommeliers take it so low-key. It's got some fizzle. That's what it's got. Okay, but I'll say that you have not just brought us champagne. You have also brought us some food to go with the champagne. So what do we got here to eat?
I have. So from our fabulous pastry chef, Kimberly DeLost, she has made some homemade blueberry muffins and some salted caramel sticky buns. Just that salted caramel, I can just feel it through the radio waves across the Chicagoland this morning.
Well, so. I'll just say before we go to break that salted caramel sticky bun, it's like lifting weights. It's just so heavy and so dense. So, you know, we put on a little pounds today just to take it off tomorrow. So
the last day.
Worried.
I mean, might as well get it all in now.
That's right. We're going to take a quick break, and then I will be right back with my good old friend and new friend, John McDaniel, and Mike McNamara. Happy New Year's Eve day, everybody. We are back here with sommelier John McDaniel and my new drinking pal. Hey, he's also the director of the Midwest Film Festival, Mike McNamara, otherwise known as Mac.
Sure.
Well, so I wanted to ask you guys, I usually like to bring together people who seemingly on the outside, you have no connection to each other. But indeed, because you guys haven't met before.
We have not.
Okay.
Just right outside the green room. Yeah.
Okay. Well, there is a connection that you might not know about. So,
oh, okay.
Mac, obviously, you are a lover of movies.
Yes, true.
Yes, you are the director of the film festival, lover of movies. And, John, when I named your long resume of accomplishments, what I didn't say is that you were also the general manager, wine sommelier, of the restaurant Los Olivos, right? Los Olivos, thank you. Los Olivos in California, which was the movie featured in Sideways.
Yes.
So you did the wine list for the entire movie Sideways.
Yeah, so... Why not?
Why not?
Which,
exactly.
Which was kind of the star of Sideways when you really look
at it.
Yeah, it was all about the wine and, you know, midlife crises, which wine helps as well. So
yes, right.
It's really it's a full circle kind of a film.
Yes. It's the cause and solution of many midlife
all of life's problems. Quote. Absolutely.
Well, and then I have that connection to Sideways because I've interviewed Alexander Payne before, the director of the movie. So so this brings us all
great
together.
Guy.
And I wanted to ask you guys, what is the hardest thing about what you do? Because I think of a sommelier, like there can't be a more fun job. You're paid to drink. And I still don't understand like why that's fair. But okay, you're paid to
life
drink.
Life is not fair.
Life
sometimes.
Is not fair. And then, you know, I think of Mac. What a great job, like being with all the actors in the city of Chicago. So you guys tell me, what is the hardest thing about what you do?
I think the time of it, you know, it's not just one restaurant. It's not just one thing. It's so many different things going on. So, you know, I work for Billy Lawless, you know, one of the best restaurateurs I've ever met. And we have three restaurants and we're about to have five / six in the next 6 months. So it's just the time of, you know, operating restaurants and the wine part of it and keeping up and studying and kind of all those things. It's certainly a lifestyle. It's not a job. So with that comes the negativity of, Mac is over here saying, like, I don't believe a word you're saying.
No, I love when you're like, you know, it's the studying.
Yes.
It's terrible.
It's terrible.
I'm so scholastic about my job. And yeah, you might be, actually.
You know, you look at, take today, for example, I'm here in the morning and, you know, love being here and got up this morning and I will be at the restaurant until 2 in the morning tomorrow and those kind of things. So it's a lifestyle, you know, it's career first and, you know, I'm at a good point in my life that's good. But that's definitely the hard part is that it's hard to find balance when you do something that you love and that, you know, it's pretty fun. I'm not going to lie.
Well, and you've taken on so much. I mean, for you, the quantity of what you do, I hadn't realized that Billy Lawless, who again owns the Gage and the Dawson and Acanto, and I knew you were going to take over the McDonald's in the Trump building.
Yeah.
So I know that's the fourth restaurant. What's the fifth restaurant you got going on?
So he's partnered with Ryan O'Donnell from Gemini Bistro, and they're doing concepts on Southport and Henderson. We actually just tore down the building a couple weeks ago. So that'll be May-ish.
Of this year, 2016.
Yeah. So that'll be the actual announcements and stuff will come out, I think, in the next week or so. But it'll be a great, you know, Southport, Lakeview area, excited to be in a new neighborhood. And it really is going to be a neighborhood restaurant, you know, created. So
Wow, that's great. So that'll get you guys out of downtown. That'll be your first thing out of downtown.
Yeah. So it'll be a different kind of commute, I think.
Yes, right. Mac, what about you? What is the hardest thing about running the Midwest Film Festival, which I love, by the way?
Oh, thank you. You know, our film festival, Midwest Independent Film Festival, is very unique. One, most fests are 5 or 6 straight days in a row in June or October, what have you. We take those days and we spread them out over the course of the year. So it's every first Tuesday all year round to kind of create a place where filmmakers and film lovers can come together all year round. So it's very unique and challenging to program all year round. The other big challenge with it is we only show films that are made here. So we're the only film festival in the country where the films are only eligible if they're made in Chicago and the Midwest. So that is a pretty unique niche and very unique mission statement. So tracking down those great films and programming all year round, it's a constant, I hate to say grind, but it is a grind all year round. And then it's also, the same way that John said, the studying, I'm studying wine and champagne. I'm watching a lot of films. I'm watching a lot of films. And I'd say only about 10% of them will ever see, a significant number of people. So that is, my version of studying is, watching just tons and tons of films.
See, I thought something that you guys both might say. So I recently had on my podcast, which is on WGN Plus here, the Dinner Party podcast. I recently had filmmaker Jack C. Newell, and he has a movie out, Open Tables, which is about the food and wine industry in Chicago.
Right,
it's a
story,
but it happens in all these different restaurants around the city. And when he was on the podcast, something that he was saying, and I think it applies to restaurants as much as it applies to indie films, it's not the building of the restaurant or the making of the movie. It's the breaking through the noise and marketing, because there are so many restaurants in this city and there are so many independent movies. And Twitter isn't enough anymore. It used to be like that was your platform to get out the word. And of course, how do you break through? So the marketing of just getting out, you've got 2 new restaurants popping up this year, and you've got a gazillion new indie films coming out.
Tons.
How do you get those noticed?
I think, on the film festival side, that's a big deal, is breaking through all of that noise, because Chicago is such a vibrant town in terms of culture and the arts and music and film and everything, that to kind of break through with the Midwest Independent Film Festival above all that noise.
Right.
You have to have a clear mission statement. You have to know what makes you special. It sounds, whether it's wine or you're a restaurant or you're a film festival or you're an artist, what makes you special, as opposed to just going out there and just saying, hey, here's something we're doing just like everyone else is doing. What makes you unique and why, why should people seek you out through all the noise?
Yeah, but it's hard to be special, I think.
Well,
John, what do you think?
In the restaurant world, it's, everybody makes a burger. Everybody makes pasta. We don't do anything that different on the food and wine side. I don't have a lot of exclusive only me kind of things. It's about the experience. Someone can come in and they can have fish and chips at the Gauge, and it could be just as good or better or worse than other fish and chips. But that's not really why they come there. They come there for the experience that is the Gauge, or that kind of mellow neighborhood feel of Acanto, or, the cocktail mecca that is the Dawson. And those kind of things of, where it's at has something to do with it, but also just the total package. It's about how you feel. Do you feel like you want to come back, not just for that burger, fish and chips, but for how you felt, how as service, hospitality, how we make you feel? I think that's why Billy has been so successful over the years, is that it's not just about what it is. It's about how you are when you're there.
Yeah. I remember when you were on my show, you said, well, the Dawson is getting a lot of Tinder dates.
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Dawson is getting a lot of Tinder dates. And I think, if you're going to a restaurant on a date, that really affects whether you have a good time or not. So a lot of it is out of your control in a way.
Yeah.
So it's that's why we're back to champagne. It's always good to have a nice bottle of wine that'll carry you through whether the date is good or bad.
Yeah, and each one is very different, which is nice to have different concepts within the family of, Acanto isn't necessarily the best Tinder date in the world because it's quieter and you're more exposed, and it's about you and that person. And Dawson is, you can people watch a little bit and you can commiserate with the person that you're with and being like, hey, look at those people over there. That's harder to do in some places. So it's all about what are you looking for tonight? And it's nice we have several different things you can do.
I think Acanto is one of the most unsung restaurants in the city. I love that place. I feel like I'm walking into a living room. It's just wonderful. It's so intimate and close. Great. Well, we're about to go to break, but just give me a quick rundown of Bubbly 2. What are Mac and I drinking over here in Bubbly 2?
Sure. So Bubbly 2, the vineyards for this are all Premier Cru vineyards, so some of the best vineyards that you'll find in this area. This is Pinot Noir with just a splash of Chardonnay. So you'll notice it's kind of like a light pink color, not a lot of skin contact, not a lot of that really color that you get from red wine. It's just about the flavor. So all sparkling wine is kind of picked earlier, so it has a little bit more green, strawberry, herbaceous kind of notes to it, and we get all sexy with those kind of things. But
sexy champagne.
Yeah,
it sounds sexy when you say it, McDaniel.
Yes, it does, McDaniel.
I also get closer to the microphone, too, when I do that, for those of you at home.
Well, hold on to that sexiness, you two. We're going to go
to break.
And
let's talk more about those Tinder dates when we get back. I'm new. I'm new to all of this.
What? Oh, I'll hook you up as well. We will be right back after the break. So we are back. Happy New Year's Eve day, everybody. My name is Elizabeth Alfano, filling in for Bill and Wendy, who are going to be back in 2016, right on Monday. So right before we went to the break, Mac and John, we were talking about Tinder dates. And I just want to know how this is possible, because I want people to walk by Michigan Avenue and see how handsome these two are. Now, how can both of you be single? How's that possible?
Well, we're workaholics, I think, is what we have found out here.
We're workaholics. Yeah, I consider myself kind of married to the Midwest Independent Film Festival, which is, it's kind of fascinating because it's one of those things where if you meet a woman early on, they're like, oh, you run a film festival. That's so great. Oh, amazing. Then they come out to the film festival and they're like, why isn't he talking to me? Why aren't you spending time with me? Why are we? Well, because I'm running a freaking giant film festival and it's jam-packed. So which John probably has a similar, you know, your work kind of takes over your life a little bit.
Oh, absolutely. I basically have the ability to say to, you know, when courting someone, I can provide you with all the free wine that you want for the rest of your life.
That's on his Tinder profile.
Well, what? Actually, no. So my ex-roommate, who is the executive chef of the Dawson, Sean, he at the time was a Tinder Olympian, like the best Tinder person I've ever seen in my life. His goal was to Tinder someone in an airport at the same time, which is a totally different thing. But now he is very much in love and they've been together forever. But he got me on that. And what I have found, the unintended consequence, I was just in South Africa and went to a lion park. If you post a picture of you petting a lion cub, you get swiped right all day long.
Yeah, so just
all day long.
Just tell people.
I don't have time to, you know, to go through all this with these ladies of Chicago. I apologize.
Because you're in South Africa petting lions.
Right, clearly.
But let's just, for the slow among us, tell us exactly what Tinder is in like the 2 seconds.
I don't know either. I'm newly single.
Oh, so you on to Tinder.
I was newly ejected back onto the single scene. And so I didn't realize there was such a thing as a Tinder date. I thought Tinder was kind of bypassing the date.
It's a real thing. So imagine that you're in a bar and every single person of the opposite sex is lined up in front of you, and you just walk by and being like, yes, no, yes, no, yes, no, and they say yes, no, yes, no, and if you both say yes, then you can actually communicate with each other and not be a weird, crazy stalker.
See, this to me is fraught with, like, potential damage. Like, gunshots could be heard here when someone says yes and the other person says no.
Well, you don't know that, which is the interesting thing about it. It's interesting.
I mean, Tinder is this app where you can look at pictures and just decide yes, no, yes, no. Just on the picture. It's a swipe, swipe, swipe.
Yes.
So you put your picture of you petting a baby lion.
Because why not? I mean,
why not?
If you're going to open yourself up to that, as it's hilarious, is really why, you know, if you're on the train or something, I would swipe left to what's going outside,
and
by the way.
I, on the other hand, have kind of said I'm not getting on Tinder. I'm not going to do it. Because over the last, now ex-girlfriend was living with me for the last 3 years, which is when Tinder came around. So as I left the single scene, there was no Tinder. And now that I'm back, I'm like, I'm not dealing with this Tinder thing. I'm not dealing. And now
I might have to go to Dawson
and get down.
So I was going to say, I've got a solution for you. Mac, you're going to the Dawson.
Oh, yes.
He's going to set you up the good wine, the good champagne, and he's going to get you onto Tinder, and he's going to set you up. And then, John, you have to go to the Midwest Film Festival where you don't have to work, and Mac can introduce you to everybody.
That sounds good. We'll do it.
And there's a cocktail hour before the Midwest Film Festival, I should say.
That's true. We'll be the perfect wingmen for each other.
Yes, exactly.
There's a new Mick alliance in Chicago on right now.
That's right.
Exactly.
Yes, McDaniel and McNamara. Exactly. The two of you are Mick joined, we'll say. You guys, quickly, what happened in 2015 for movies and restaurants, and where do you see it going, more importantly, in 2016?
You know, on the independent film scene in Chicago, it's very vibrant, and it's really growing. It's a really special time. A lot of the reason for that is because people are staying here in Chicago.
Right.
A lot of filmmakers are, because we have a lot of great TV shows that are here now. Chicago Fire, Chicago PD, the brand new Chicago Med, and a lot of people don't know Empire, even though it's set in New York, all shoots here. So there's enough work to keep independent filmmakers here in Chicago, and there's just a lot of great films being made here now. So 2016 should be a great year for Chicago.
Even though, are we losing our Illinois film tax?
We are not. It's back
in
full swing.
Good.
It kind of got misinterpreted a little bit. It was put on pause just as the state was figuring out its budget woes. But it's now back in full swing, and it's helping bring independent films back here to Chicago.
Woohoo! Right. So, John, what are we going to see going forward in 2016? Because the restaurant space is so crowded, and I keep thinking, people are going to get kind of tired of taking pictures of their food and wine, and that just does not happen.
No, never. I mean, 15 was interesting because it was a lot of steakhouses and kind of safe things that have been successful. You know, the independent guys, you know, really struggled of, you have to really draw people from across Chicago to come visit your restaurant. I mean, Parachute was probably the best example of independent, you know, very specific concept. But, you know, the Boca Guys, Lettuce, everybody's doing steak because it's Chicago and steak wins. And I think that 16 will kind of continue to be, you know, the restaurant groups that restaurants are all about real estate. You know, they're the ones that have the capital to actually buy buildings. And you look at what Billy's doing with new restaurants. Those are the ones that are going to continue to shine in 16. And the independent guys are kind of going to be fighting for, you know, the same little bit of attention.
Oh, that's a little heartbreaking to hear.
What's the key to an independent? Because I love those kind of one stop, you know, only one spot, chef owned, no, you know, conglomerate or what have you, like Lettuce or those other ones. What is the key for that one chef that wants to open his or her own spot?
Money.
Yeah,
it's hard. It's all about money. I mean, you have to have basically a year's worth of capital to, you know, last you through people finding out about you.
Mm-hmm.
And it's in that, you know, we live in a world now of reviewers reviewing the first week, and, you know, everybody has an opinion now, and the Yelping is, you know, still out there and all those things. If people are searching for, you know, that next big thing, you know, you have to have something that's completely different and that is completely above and beyond fantastic. I mean, you can't, you know, go halfway.
And the marketing budget almost has to be bigger than actually the creating of the menu.
Yeah. And you have to have delicious champagne as a segue.
So let me ask you, Mac, what was your favorite of the three champagnes?
I loved the... I'm not much of a champagne connoisseur, which is why it's so fun being here with John. So
your new friend.
To say that my brand new friend and soon to be best friend, my Tinder wingman. So I would say my Tinder consultant. The one in the middle is a little sweeter. I kind of like it. That's the way I would lean. That being said, I will never kick a glass of champagne out of bed.
What are we drinking? What? Because number two is my favorite as well, the one in the middle.
Okay, so we'll do number two first then. Actually, we'll do that last, because why not? Number three, which is your producer Kevin's favorite, is Dom Pérignon Rosé 2004, which not
WGN
my favorite.
In the WGN Radio Studios,
exactly. So you can find that in Binnie's today for about $300.
Ouch!
I gotta drink this stuff. Now I gotta drink this.
Number one, which is also not picked, probably my favorite everyday kind of a thing. Also a cheater. It's not actually champagne. It's from Northern Italy. It's from a producer called Bissol. It's called Geo Rosé. It is about $18 in Binnie's today.
All right.
So it's kind of a good, the point of it is that you don't have to drink champagne every day to drink something delicious and pink. But the winner is champagne from Premier Cru Vineyards. It's called Devalois Prestige Rosé. You can find it in Binnie's today for about $65. So
there we're middle go. Of the road,
there you
Mac.
Go. There you,
you
go.
And I,
we love it.
We do. But
you
I'm...
can buy four bottles of Devalois for one bottle of Dom Pérignon Rosé today. So
I'm going to drink all my Dom Pérignon because I'll never get it again. But give us the name of the $18 one, because that was almost my second choice, and I want people to have a nice choice for tonight, because that's really where people are going to land. Tell me again.
Absolutely. So it's Bisol, so Bisol. Is the producer, and Jeo, J-E-I-O, is their proprietary name for the cuvée. So it's Pinot Noir and actually a little bit of Merlot, going back to our sideways conversation yeah. earlier. But just great, easy. We actually pour it by the glass at a canto every day. So it's something that Billy loves to give away, the pink bubbles, like he invented it. So we've definitely become familiar with it around the house. So
wonderful. And that's $18 at Binnie's.
Yes. It's good. Or I'm just going to go to a canto, Gage, or Dawson and say, John,
help me.
Go. Help, help.
Help, help me in many ways.
Let's make this work.
All the above. And today at all three is definitely Bubbles Day. So it's Thursday. We do something called 3-Liter Thursday. Big bottles at both Gage and Acanto, and then Dawson, it's 20% off all bubbly today. So
we will be there, Mac and I. I am so sorry that our time is up. Before we go to break, I have a quick question, an outgoing one-word question for each of you. 2016, who would you like to have a drink with? John McDaniel?
The next Mrs. John McDaniel.
Ladies, line up. His Twitter handle is Mick Vino.
Mic drop right there.
Twitter handle Mick Vino. Mac, who you
bring me with? Obama.
Oh, yes. You want a drink with Obama.
Yeah.
All right. And what's your Twitter handle?
I'm at Find Mac. And also for the Midwest Independent Film Festival, do at Midwest Film.
But
follow
you
us on Twitter,
personally, so I can get you a date. What is it again?
At Find Mac. Oh, that's
Find,
be
F-I-N-D.
Yes.
No pressure.
Mac. Find
no pressure,
Mac.
Everyone.
Okay, we've got a break. You guys, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Year.
Happy New Year's Eve day, everyone. My name is Elizabeth Alfano, and I am in until just about noon for Bill and Wendy. Bill and Wendy are going to be back on Monday, 2016, but I'm with you for today. So I have a wonderful guest with me. I'll tell you, he has such an interesting background, and this has been such a tumultuous year in many ways, 2015. My next guest is a priest, but he's also a jazz guitarist. So his name is Father John Mulder, and I really want to talk spiritually. That's such a big word, spiritually. But, you know, what has gone on sort of karmically, if you will, 2015, where are we going? And, of course, also his music taste. So, and how he works religion and music here.
Oh, thanks so much, Elizabeth. Great to be here.
Great to be here with you. And just so you know, our previous guest, sommelier John McDaniel, did give you a little bit of champagne. So
uh-oh,
feel free.
Watch out.
You've got water and you've got champagne
okay,
sitting right, next to you. So
yeah.
You are in good stead here.
Thanks.
So let me ask a basic question.
Yeah, sure.
I really think of you as a jazz guitarist.
Okay. Yeah.
But I
And it's in Andersonville, and I'm also I assist over at the Scheele Center, which is at Northwestern.
Aha! Uh-huh.
Yeah, so
yes.
Those are my two abodes, as you will, pastorally.
So you can perform weddings, and you give
that's right.
masses,
yeah,
and
that's right.
So you are a functioning priest.
Yeah,
okay,
that's
I didn't
right. yeah.
I didn't fully realize that because I know that you
yeah.
are a jazz musician as
sure.
well. So
yep. yeah, it's a lot of plate spinning.
It's
isn't
a lot
it?
Of plate
yeah.
spinning, and we'll talk about it a little later. But I think it's so fascinating how music and religion can do some of the same things.
Sure.
Maybe
yeah,
we'll
I
see your perspective
what you're saying,
on
yeah.
that.
Mm-hmm.
But first, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about the year in review. I mean, what is your takeaway from 2015?
Well, you know, I don't know if I've think of it in terms of the year. I mean, I think where things are going, there's, you know, we're always made aware of the things that are such challenges that we face that are, sometimes seem insurmountable, you know, with the media. And yet what I come across day in, day out is so many people's goodness, too. Mm-hmm. So I like to think it's a hopeful time of moving forward, but not without the sobering realities that, of course, you know, we face. So, and more than 2015, I mean, it's just where we are in the world. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So mm-hmm. I think things that concern me are certainly the displacement of people, you know, like we saw with Syria and so forth, and things that we all are maybe addressing, like wider global issues like climate change, things like that.
It's, yes.
They're formidable challenges, but it's where the human spirit also needs to rise to the fore to meet those rather than feeling overwhelmed. You know, you just do the bit you can.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in a way, I always think these times of challenges are really our chance to rise to the occasion and see what the human spirit is capable of.
Yeah.
Of course, if you're working at that sort of crisis mode for too long, you just burn out.
You burn out.
Right.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And that's where I take issue with the media, because it's unrelenting coverage of bad, even when bad may be bad and they want to make bad worse because it's better for headlines. And it's just, it fatigues people and it stresses them out, I feel, unnecessarily. Not that the challenges aren't there, they are, but it seems to just overwhelm people, as you
I
say.
I think so, yeah.
And often there are so many stories of the good human spirit championing.
Yes,
so,
of course, yeah, yeah.
I don't know if you have any suggestions for people on how to get through stressful times. I mean, the holidays can be very stressful for people, mm-hmm. not just the Christmas part of it, but also going into the new year, either financial challenges or just sort of facing the world anew. I don't know if you ever talk about that with people in your
in terms of challenge. Yeah. Well, for the new year, I mean, you take a breath, you start there, you know, and you do the little bit that you can with, you know, and it's maybe in a similar way as like we're talking about the media. Of course, the media does a lot of great things and they apprise us of what really is going on, which, of course, can be overwhelming. But also, you know, our personal situations, when they become overwhelming, you have to stop. And I think just go step by step, you know. I guess it's a little bit like the AA model of, you know, one step at a time and doing what you can, focusing on that and bringing yourself back to the moment and mm-hmm. what you can do in it.
Mm-hmm. I often think when it feels overwhelming, at least for me, I really can't say for anyone else, but at least for me, when it feels overwhelming, that's the time when I get really quiet and I turn off all the noise I can. So obviously media first to go out. But, you know, even like the phone, the cell phone, the computer, because I know that all the tools I have to get me over the hump, I have within myself.
Yeah.
I just have to tap into them.
Yeah.
And when I'm feeling overwhelmed or like maybe I can't do it or it's too much, it's because I've become disconnected from myself somehow.
Mm-hmm.
And the faster I can tap into my own strength by resting and blocking everything out, the faster I get back to empowering myself. And that's when I usually get over the hump.
Yeah. Well, and a lot of people do that through things, for example, like meditation. It's a one way to you come back, or just quiet prayer, just something simple as that, taking those moments. And of course, in a faith perspective, I look at it as you're communing with yourself, but with God, and that those moments are revivify us and give us the strength to kind of go back out in the world. In one way, you're kind of removing yourself from the world for a little while, but it's a way of engaging it too, because then you're back in it in a more productive, clear way.
Yeah, in a present way.
That's right.
Yes, right. And then
in
you
an
can
energized
be, right.
and with a fullness rather than feeling like what you said earlier, I think, is which is all too easy to do, is to burn out.
Yes, right.
Yeah.
And that's one of the reasons why, you know, and I love Christmas and I love the whole holiday season, but I really love New Year's Eve and New Year's Day.
Oh, wow, yeah.
That's, for me, a chance to kind of turn everything off, you know, because we've got January 1st, 2nd, and 3rd. So those will be really quiet days. Nothing going on in work, nothing. So I'll get this little, and family's kind of, I don't want to say over, because of course I love my family, but you know, all the festivities and parties and stuff, it's over, and now it's sort of me time. So I really look forward to these 3 days to just chill.
Yeah, isn't the week after Christmas between that and New Year's, it's lovely. I mean, most people are off of work. And
yeah, it's so dreamy. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. We're going to take a quick break. But more importantly, when we come back, we're going to talk to you about your music. And I think you're going to perform something live. So that'll be
maybe
fun.
So, yeah.
We'll be back with Father John Mulder. Everybody, welcome back. My name is Elizabeth Alfano, and happy New Year's Eve day. I'm here filling in for Bill and Wendy, and they'll be back with you in 2016, right on Monday. So when we were at the break, Father John Mulder was talking to us a little bit about how to get through the stress of the holidays. And he was saying, you know, I do this on my show, either my live show at City Winery or on my podcast here at WGNplus.com. I bring in food and drink for people, like we did in the first segment. And Father was saying, oh, it's sort of a Eucharistic move, you know, to give people food. And the funny thing is, you it's so true, more than you know, it breaks down barriers. You're giving someone something and they're taking it. And that makes them immediately feel comfortable and at home. And I always feel it makes for a better interview. So
great.
I think that's right.
I think it's a great idea.
Well, so, you know, we were going to talk about your creative process, but I wonder if it isn't better to let people hear you first live.
Oh, okay.
And then we can talk about how you go about writing your songs and sort of your motivation behind them. So tell us what you're going to play for us now.
Well, I think here I'll just play, I was just planning on playing a jazz standard.
Great.
And, you know, a lot of jazz is steeped in a lot of improvisation. It's kind of at the center of it. So I'm just going to improvise around All the Things You Are, and we'll see where it goes.
Wonderful.
Okay.
Incredible. Incredible. Father John Mulder, thank you for that.
It's fun.
It's so beautiful and improvised, as you say. You're just kind of, I mean, of course, it's a jazz standard that we know. You can probably hear that, everyone listening. It resonates with something we've all heard before, but it is your own take on today.
On today. That's it. Yeah.
So tell me, I'm curious, what do you get from music that you don't get from the priesthood and vice versa? Or are they really one and the same for you?
Well, I'll tell you this. I mean, as I look at it, that, you know, it comes from, for me, a very same place. And so even when you look at what I do, it feels like it flows from spirit. And so they're kind of different manifestations of it, directions of it. But they work on, I I believe in that direction. So, and I, what would I say about it? Well, you know, music is oftentimes used or enlisted to help with spiritual movement in religion and so forth, the liturgies and so forth. So I think, you know, the church was very aware of the fact of how it uplifts, elevates the mind and heart and that kind of thing. So it's very much, you know, incorporated, I think, and integrated into, you know, our faith life.
Yes. You know, I always say, like, the way to reach people, because I went to Catholic school my whole life. I went to Sacred Heart.
Oh, yeah.
And then I went to St. Ignatius. But I learned nothing. I'm so sorry. I know it's so upsetting to the Jesuits and the nuns.
Oh, no. Don't tell them that.
I learned nothing. No, I know. I mean, I don't really follow. But I do think that the way to reach people, I always say, is food or music. And I really do think that music can touch people in a way that, you know, maybe a sermon can, and maybe that's just not the way to reach them. Maybe music is even more impactful.
Oh, yeah. They all have their own unique in art and film and music,
yes.
You know, inroads into opening up things for the human spirit. I mean, I like to think that there's a lot of times with music, and maybe you've experienced this too, Elizabeth, is where a piece of music comes on and it opens a place for you that's otherwise inaccessible.
That you didn't even know you had.
It could be, yeah. And so that's the power of it. And so that's what I love about it. And that's in many ways how it feeds me.
You know, an ex-boyfriend of mine used to say he was Jewish, pretty much non-practicing, and I'm born Catholic, pretty much non-practicing. And he used to always say, and I thought this was so insightful, he used to always say, well, people really go to church because it's their permission to sing. Because if you're a bad singer, then you always feel self-conscious, and your voice isn't great, no one really wants to hear you.
Yeah.
So you don't have permission anywhere except in temple or in church to kind of let loose and sing. And singing, of course, feels so good.
Sure.
Music feels so good, and that heavy breathing that you have to do with singing. And, of course, you know, both religions really encourage you to sing, and there's music involved. And I thought, that's so insightful that, you know, you have this permission with music in church.
Oh,
in
yeah.
Temple, which is really kind of interesting.
Well, and I don't know if, I suppose they have studied it, you know, biologically, neurologically, but I think it shifts your consciousness, and you know, you go get into what, you know, some people have called flow.
Mm.
And I think it's a different way of being that, you know, all these things kind of work on that behalf.
And it's funny, we were talking at the top of the last segment and we were saying, oh, you know, for me at least, January 1st, 2nd, and 3rd, it's always a time for me to kind of tune out, except for music. I turn everything off, the TV, the news, the cell phone, the computer.
And so in a way, yeah, with music, you tune
music.
In.
I tune in because I'm tuning into myself.
Yeah.
We unfortunately are going to take yet another break, but we're going to come back after the break with Father John Mulder. So we are back here on New Year's Eve Day. My name is Elizabeth Alfano, filling in for Bill and Wendy. They'll be back on Monday, 2016. Until then, I'm here with Father John Mulder. We were just hearing during the break his original composition. So he's a composer as well as a jazz guitarist of Chaos. And before the break, we heard his improvised version of a jazz standard. Father, I wanted to ask you, what is your creative writing process? Because I wondered if it comes from scripture or if it comes from more personal messages.
Well, I'll tell you this. A lot of times when I compose, in my creative process, at least for composition, oftentimes I'll start playing, and maybe after about an hour, sometimes I'll find that I switch into really a kind of a deeper level of concentration, and it's that whole type of almost like another sense of time, like where, you know, time flies so quickly, you know. So I'll, at that point, I'm very much absorbed, and sometimes if a new idea is coming, that's when I usually create the best and the most and most productively is in those moments.
Well, I'm wondering, because this song that we heard at the break, Chaos, coming in, this instrumental, you talked to me a little about it before the interview, saying that, you know, the end of the year is this time for chaos. And actually, the New Year's festival is a chaotic time when energies shift. So you had had that in mind when you were creating that song. Talk to me a little bit about the energy that happens at the end of the year, that shift, and how you work it in into your music.
Yeah. Well, the Trinity was a CD that I made that was kind of unique in its approach, and that the sacred themes kind of were something that I created from. You know, other times I just compose and don't have a preconceived idea of what, you know, is going. With Chaos and Creation, basically what I was drawing from is that all the great creation myths of not only Genesis, but others as well, have chaos precedes creation. And for a lot of the traditional societies, they had rituals that would actually enact that almost in a way to annul time. We tend to think of time moving forward. They wanted to go backward to the time of creation, the sacred time. And in those rituals, the New Year's festival could be a kind of a chaos that was inhabited. Rules of the society were reversed. Masters became slaves. Slaves became masters. So it was a real kind of chaos. They weren't intellectually thinking this through. It's just how it mythically operated. And then moving towards, you know, the new creation, which is that pristine moment of a new order, a new life.
A new year.
Yeah, a new year.
So it's interesting how we sort of mirror that today. We have the chaotic New Year's Eve party
that's
goes way into midnight with craziness. And,
that's where it kind of, it all started way back then. But we've, there's a case to be made that that kind of mythic framework is somewhere within us or in the human psyche somewhere.
But when you say mythical, I think of something that actually never happened but is a myth. But I think you're actually referring to sort of people over time, different cultures over time have somehow in their biorhythms kept this rhythm that through time, there's a point in time, but whether it's calendar year or not, that they kind of go to chaos before they come out with a new sort of standard of living or a new creation.
Yeah, not so much consciously, but, you know, that mythically and ritually.
Ritually.
Yeah, kind of moved in that direction for the traditional societies, you know, is what I'm saying. That's I'm drawing on people like Mircea Eliade, who investigated a lot of that. And
Was a Chicagoan, no?
A Chicagoan, yeah, from University of Chicago
a historian.
Long time ago. Yeah,
yes.
Of religions.
So making that parallel that many cultures over time have done this, had this sort of...
That experience of it. And that really New Year's comes from that in its very origins.
So that leads me to ask you, what are you doing this evening? what's your chaos going to be?
I'm keeping it kind of quiet, maybe. So I don't have like huge New Year's Eve plans. In fact, you know, I've played probably, I thought about this yesterday, maybe 20, 25 times in the course of my lifetime, I've played over New Year's Eve.
Sure.
I don't happen to have a New Year's Eve gig this year. So we in the biz would say, you know, the bad news is I don't have a New Year's Eve gig, and the good news is I don't have a New Year's Eve gig. Yeah. So I think a lot of musicians, you know, if they don't happen to enjoy the quiet and the solitude like you're talking about.
Yeah, I can actually see where I don't know if I'd want to be playing New Year's Eve if I were a musician.
It can be enjoyable and certainly has it can be some fun, but it's a lot of work.
So it's funny, we're talking about chaos and the sort of storm before the calm, if you will. And right behind you on Michigan Avenue, I'm looking through the windows and I'm seeing there's a protest going on. Mm. Police everywhere on bikes. They're walking and cameras, of course, media. Where there is police, there is media. But I guess we're having a very peaceful demonstration about our police force here in the city. So, but everything's looking very peaceful. No need, not it's not true chaos here. Although Michigan Avenue is shutting down for this peaceful demonstration. So, I wanted to ask you. You said that you are not actually going to play tonight, but when is your next date so that people could hear you live?
Yeah. Well, the next thing, and I tend to schedule a little less in the winter, but one thing that I'm really looking forward to in a couple of weeks is at 27 Live on January 14th. It's a Thursday.
In Evanston.
In Evanston. And so I'm part of a series, a concert series that was started by Steve Rashid. He's a piano player and producer, really a great guy. And he's had a lot of duos and trios, but I'm playing solo guitar, kind of like I am here. So it's good. I've been really trying to work towards doing some more solo guitar pieces for this.
I have to say, the guitar as an instrument is such a beautiful instrument that to me it's always a pity when it's joined with so many others, because I can never really hear it in its full glory. And I love the guitar alone. A guitar is so beautiful. Yeah. And Steve Rashid, of course, I think is somebody who's so talented. Yeah. So is 27 Live, maybe I had it confused, is 27 Live part of the Whiskey Lounge?
Well, yeah, Whiskey Lounge is part of the 27 Live.
Right,
it's
okay.
Like the I think that's how it is. But it's upstairs.
Yes.
And it's a small room where, you know, we perform.
I've been there, and I've been to his Thursday night.
Isn't it great?
Yeah, because every Thursday night at 27 Live, he has someone in jazz.
He does, yeah.
Yeah, he's really so wonderful.
Yeah.
Well, so you will be playing on January 14th.
That's right.
At 27 Live.
Yeah.
And you have a new CD coming out soon.
That's
Tell
right.
Tell me about that.
Yeah, so I'm excited about that. It's called Earthborn Tales of Soul and Spirit, and it was inspired by various people who inspired me, I guess, with soulfulness of their life. So one, I'll give you a couple examples. One is Ruby Bridges, who was the first African-American girl in New Orleans to go to a desegregated school. And, you know, there's stories of her just, you know, walking with the two federal marshals hand in hand and against a lot of protest at that time. This is the early 60s. But she always has inspired me with her spirit and her, you know, her courage. So there's a suite on her. Also one on Thomas Merton, great spiritual writer, social activist, kind of monk in the 60s. And it's called Journey to the East, which was his final journey that he made when he went to meet people like the Dalai Lama, other people in the East. So,
and when will this be out?
Hopefully either by late spring or early fall.
Okay.
So,
we have a little bit of while that we're going to wait for that.
Oh, yeah.
But I'll say, if anyone is looking to chill like I do January 1, 2, and 3, if anybody's looking to chill, I recommend Father John Mulder's listening to his work. It's so beautiful.
You.
As we just heard live here in our last segment, and we're going to hear again as we bump out into the next segment.
Yeah.
The music that we're about to hear is Freedom. So it's a little more lively for you.
Yeah.
But of course, you do a lot of really mellow, soulful pieces. And if we can just go to Father John Mulder. No, johnmulder.com.
johnmulder.com.
And can we download songs from there, or do we go to iTunes to actually download
your
songs?
You can go to iTunes also. I know it's a little old school, but CDs can be purchased.
Be
yeah.
Okay, so you can buy CDs.
Yeah, at the website.
At the website, you can buy CDs,
yes.
johnmulder.com, or on iTunes. It's a great way to chill over the next couple of days. Father John Mulder, thanks so much for being here.
You're so welcome.
Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year to you, Elizabeth. Thanks.
Thank you, sir. It's so fast.
It is so fast.
It is so fast. Hi, everyone. I am back with you. Happy New Year's Eve day. My name is Elizabeth Alfano, filling in for Bill and Wendy. So I'm so excited to have my next guest, Harry Lennox. Just a hometown honey, a Chicago actor who's, of course, gone on to do great things in L.A. He plays Harold Cooper, the assistant director of counterterrorism for the FBI on the popular NBC series The Blacklist. And I think even new episodes of that are coming out January 7th. And then he's also in the upcoming Batman versus Superman Dawn of Justice movie. He will again play General Swanwick. And most notably, we can see him right now in movie theaters as Commissioner Blades in Spike Lee's Chirac. So if I've got technology on my side, I think I have Harry Lennox with me by phone.
Happy New Year Eve for you, Elizabeth. Good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you. Happy New Year's Eve to you. Thanks for calling in today, because I know that you are back in Chicago to see family.
That's correct. My mom turns 92 tomorrow, on New Year's baby. So we're celebrating with her.
Good girl. Good girl. Well, again, thanks for taking time today when you are really here to see your family. You know, I wanted to ask you, a lot of people probably don't know this about you, but you started your acting career, of course, here in Chicago. But before that, you were an English and music teacher.
Right, yeah, Chicago Public Schools. Primarily, I worked at a school called Bass Elementary in Englewood, and it's now a magnet school. But I was there for the better part of 8 years, mostly teaching music, and then that program got cut. You know, it happens in a lot of schools. Some of the more necessary programs are not considered as vital as I think they are. Music, for example, physical ed, these kinds of things. So I did that for a long time, and it was some of the most rewarding work I've ever done in my life.
I'm not surprised by that. In fact, just before this segment, we had Father John Mulder on talking about sort of the power of music, maybe even stronger than religion per se. And I can really see that connection. So did you grow up in Englewood?
I grew up in South Shore, but I was a permanent substitute in a lot of schools around the Chicagoland area. I mostly worked on the west side and south side. But I grew up in South Shore, which, you know, is dramatic in its own right.
Yeah.
But I have a great love for Englewood, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. And so when you started here doing theater all over the Goodman Theater and lots of theaters around Chicago, you were really sort of a Shakespeare specialist. Do I have that right?
Yeah, sort of right. Yeah, I did a fair amount of Shakespeare. I worked some with the Piven Theater Workshop. We did a couple of plays there. I worked at Cole Theater. I did Othello there. And I did a number of my own productions of Shakespeare. I did a production of Julius Caesar for the Black Ensemble Theater, which did very well for a long time. And sped on to a couple of other cities. So, you know, I've always had a great love for Shakespeare. And in point of fact, I'm proud to say, I think at least, that I have the first ever Black Shakespeare film. That is to say, it's from the point of view of the Black experience in America here, but it's all of Shakespeare's language, and it's a film based on plays of Henry IV by Shakespeare, which we call H4. In a couple of festivals, we hope to get it out in wider release sometime in the very early new year, but yes, Shakespeare's always been a great passion of mine.
Yes, and I believe this is with your Exponent Media Group, is that correct?
That's correct. Absolutely right.
So, yes, just tell us briefly then, if you don't mind, because I was going to get to that later, but you gave me a nice segue. So tell me about this new media group that you're working with so that you can produce your own films.
Yeah, well, you know, these days it's so much bigger than film. You know, some
right.
people have been claiming that film is dead because of the onslaught of things like special video services, Netflix, and all of these. Groups, but so media is really what we are. So we call ourselves Exponent Media Group, and I formed this company with a good friend from Chicago. His name is Steve Harris.
Mm-hmm.
He's from the west side, I'm on the south side, but you may remember him from, actually he's in Chirac.
Yeah.
When he's old Duke. Matt, and he was also on The Practice for many years, very great actor, and a terrific friend. So we've been on movies now for about 5 years. We hope to, of course, do television as well, cable, whatever particular medium is in need of content. We want to provide the kind of content that we like to see. So that is a talent. I don't see it in any way as sort of exclusively Black or minority type of content. We want to make good movies for the people who like the kind of movies we like to see. So. But the way I like to describe it is we have three particular fortes. One is Shakespeare, or the classic, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
There is, if you will, scriptural-based content. So, for example, I've got, we've got now a movie called Revival, which is basically the Gospel of John set to Black gospel music. And then the third area of expertise is in basically what we call genre films. So a Western, for example, or a rom-com, or a horror movie. So that would be probably the smallest of our three focuses, but we want to do independent movies. we want to make a real dent in the what might be called a faith-based market. But rather than being faith-based, we really want to be the basis of the faith. So rather than something which may have a little bit of church in it, or a little bit of God in it, we want to take stories from the Bible and then put those into modern context, or at least into recognizable context for American audience.
It's fascinating. Literally, the person just here before you is doing the exact same thing in music. It's Father John Mulder who is taking some things from scripture and then translating them into jazz and his improvised jazz guitar. So you're right in sequence with us today. But I'm grateful that you are paying attention to this, because I'm always lamenting to my boyfriend, I have Netflix, I have Amazon, I have Hulu. I can't find anything to watch. So I'm looking forward to lots more quality content coming.
That's right. You know, I think you're going to be exactly the type of customer we want. You know, it's actually rather shocking. You've got all of these things, and I think people make movies like they run candidates for office. They do these whether they call it, they triangulate what people might be interested in, and then they kind of, by committee, they put a movie together. And you got a little bit of this, a little bit of that. And there's very few movies now, very little content, which is designed to be what it is, which is what Aristotle might call entelechy. You know, something that is designed where the very form is designed to pursue a purpose or a cause. I look at movies or television shows. Actually, for the last couple of days, we were off of the Blacklist, and I was watching several episodes of Gunsmoke, which started out in 1955, 50 years ago. And you look at the, actually 60 years ago, and you look at these great stories told by these tremendously gifted actors, very simple, very kind of morality plays, and the writing and the excellence and the acting and the production values. Very simple, very good, very clearly what it was supposed to be. You use words like God. I even used the other day, somebody got married, and I said something about Christ. And I was saying to myself, you know, nobody would even dare say that.
Right.
So,
right.
Yeah, I think the erosion of that kind of, and I'm not a proselytizer, I'm not a priest like Reverend Mulder. But I would say that somebody should bring ethics back into the entertainment field, and I think it's a decided effort on the part of a lot of people to eliminate all of it, and I think it has caused a great erosion in the quality of entertainment that we get.
Yeah, it's amazing. Sometimes I have to watch so many trailers that I just tell my boyfriend, okay, I've seen 7 trailers. I think I'll just go to bed now, because that ends up being the entertainment, because I can't find one that I like. So my time just ends up going to watching the 7 or 10 trailers. And, you know, I'm not looking for movies to guide my life, but I am looking for movies or any entertainment. It could be music, but let's talk about TV and film for right now, to leave me with a sense of fulfillment, that I've seen something that meant something to me. Did it have to mean the world? No. Am I looking for redemption in a movie? No. But I don't want to leave a movie feeling empty. And I often feel like that 2 hours I just gave left me feeling lifeless.
Right. Yeah. And that gets paraded around, you know, that is what gets celebrated. And you wind up looking for things to win major festivals or awards or Emmys. With all this stuff, which is sort of nihilistic, it leaves you feeling empty, it leaves you feeling depressed about the state of the world. Mm-hmm. And I honestly think that art is, you know, for example, there's a filmmaker out there with television, I won't mention his name, but, you know, people, he won a lot of kudos recently for doing a movie about some very ugly things. And people told me, they would literally say things like, it was hard to watch, but it was a really good movie. And to me, that is a contradiction in terms. The very idea of aesthetics itself, the very idea of art is beautiful. While it may be a dense or difficult segment, while it may be compelling and in some ways disturbing, it should never be difficult to look at. You should be compelled to look at it because you want to learn something about this human experience. You want to learn something about the world that we have to navigate through. Whatever these stories may have to be set, I think that's why these faith-based things are going so well, is because they're about something. They're teaching you about how people deal in circumstances that we find ourselves going through, without being as nihilistic, without being as depressing. And I'm not saying anything should be a happy ending, but I'm just, there should be some method that is used by the people who are making the film, by the people who are approaching it, who are going to see it, where more information, more light is shed on an otherwise obscure or troubling concept or situation.
I see exactly what you mean. We're going to go here for a really quick break, and we're going to be back to speak with Harry Lennox more about the movies. I am back with Harry Lennox. Harry, so sorry to put you on hold. I hope you're still there with us.
But all right, I don't buy the toll.
Okay. Well, thank you. You know, I wanted to ask you, so you started here in Chicago. How did you make the switch to L.A. and make it big, I'll say?
Well, you know, I think everybody's got a kind of internal clock that tells them when it's time to move on to another challenge. And I was about 25. I'd done a number of plays and so forth here in Chicago. They even did the odd movie or two with people like Andy Davis, my good friend, the director.
Yeah, he's been on the show.
He's just great. He's actually from my neighborhood in Chicago, in South Shore, originally. As is Mandy Patinkin. I grew up in South Shore, not too far from where I didn't know them at the time, of course. In any case, I got this opportunity to go out to L.A. My friend had sort of pioneered the way out there already, and I slept on the couch for a couple of months. And during that time, this is a 1 in 100,000 chance, I'm sure, something that I auditioned for in Chicago, something called the Five Heartbeats, was going to production. And so somehow it worked out where I could do the movie because one of the actors who was supposed to play my part wound up doing a television show.
Oh.
And they needed somebody to quickly sort of start. So it's sort of classic, you know, Hollywood story or show business story where you're kind of an understudy waiting in the wings. One day somebody stubs a toe and you have to go on. And that's sort of how I made my break into feature films. And then it was a pretty easy correlative after that to, you know, to start doing the television shows out there. But my path was somewhat circuitous. I did the L.A. thing, came back to Chicago, taught some more school.
Oh.
I got a call from a woman that I went to college with who had just become an agent at William Morris in New York. And she told me to come out there, and she was my representative. So I then went out to New York, stayed there for a couple of years. I worked with people like Julie Taymor, the genius director, my idol and mentor, and that's sort of the way I did it. So Chicago, L.A., L.A. back to Chicago, Chicago, New York, New York to L.A.
Well, let me ask you, because it seems that obviously there's no substitute for talent. And as we know, there is no substitute ever for hard work and whatever anyone does. But luck sometimes can play a little bit of a role. But for as blessed as a life as you have, I would say, people often think, oh, you've made it. It must be now easy or glamorous. And I think nothing could be further from the truth. I'm wondering, I don't know if this is the right expression, but how are you surviving Hollywood in the sense that, you know, yes, now you're in bigger movies and you're in bigger TV shows, but it doesn't make it necessarily any easier, and maybe it makes it more pressure filled. And so I'm wondering, what's that like to keep up with the modern day pressures of it all?
Well, that's a stupid question because, you know, you're quite right. Most people think, oh, I've seen him on an episode of Days of Our Lives. He must be a millionaire.
Yeah, right. Well.
So the way it is now is that this is an entire segment that we could do on it. But the way that it works now is the more that you have things like Netflix or Hulu or whatever, the less money the actors get. So it really, that kind of aggregatization or whatever of entertainment, where you can pay $12 and see everything ever made,
mm-hmm.
Means that the profits have almost completely gone out of the business. So you really have to make up for that in terms of volume. So now, fortunately, you've got all this stuff on the web, and so some of those things can sort of help bridge the gap. But it's but the idea of making it in Hollywood, you're never safe there. I mean, maybe one or two guys, one or two gals, maybe, have not to worry about anything anymore. But the more money you make, the more expenses you have. I'm still living paycheck to paycheck because of this production company
we
talked about. So all of these things have been self-financed at this point. But going forward, we hope to be able to attract, in a pretty crowded playing field, we hope to attract investors. But it really is a very highly speculative game. It really is venture capital. Mm-hmm. And so you really, some years are feast, some years are famine. There may be two or three years that I've gone by in this career of mine. Probably I could add 4 or 5 years where I couldn't get arrested in Hollywood. And I had to just sort of eke out existence on savings and all kinds of other stuff. You don't do another job. So it's tough.
Well, you know, I'm actually heading out to L.A., and I'll be there for about 4 months, and I would love to have this conversation. I don't know if you're ever free to do this kind of interview again, but I think that it's incredible how difficult the trajectory can be, and I think it's very inspiring for people to hear that, you know, you still work at it. You work at it every day. Sadly, here on the radio, we're short for time. I'll ask you two quick last questions. If you had any words of advice for anyone trying to make it out there? Maybe you've learned some very important lessons that have helped you through your time. I'm wondering what you would tell someone.
Well, you know, I guess my chief advice is always to make sure that this is what you want to do, because there'll be enough. It's tough. Even if you make it, as you were pointing out, it's difficult. But I would say to make sure that this is, and be honest with yourself. Do you want to be a movie star, do you want to be a great actor? Because those are two different problems. You could be both. You could be neither. But you can usually save yourself from a bunch of conflict if you make the decision. Do I really want to act? Because you can do that. Mm-hmm. You can do that in a lot of different ways. Mm-hmm. If you want to be a star, then you have to know what your line in the sand is. You can't just go out there and, you know, get on the casting couch and expect that that's going to, you know, make your name for you. Some people do that and they get a career and all that. But eventually you wind up having to answer to the choices that you make. So know what your line in the sand is. Give yourself an honorable way out at every time. But also, if this is what you want to do, know that there are opportunities for you to develop your craft and to become an actor and for you to study more. And that if you really want to be engaged at a certain level of greatness, then there, if you study hard enough and if you stick with it and persevere, you can do it.
Yeah, I love that. Where are you going to draw the line in the sand? Because I think everybody needs that sense of, I'm going to go so far, but I'm not going to sell the farm or my soul or wherever that line is for you, you know? So I think that's great advice. Yeah. One last quick question before, sadly, we let you go. New Year's Eve resolutions, do you have any?
To get one of my movies sold.
Well, I hope that I can help promote your new movies when they come out, for sure. I'll say that I have the same New Year's resolution every year, and that is peace of mind. So I'm going to leave you on that peace of mind note. I hope that you have a wonderful time with your 93-year-old mother, and very happy holidays to you.
Thank you very much, Elizabeth. Let's talk again.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you.
Bye-bye.